I'm doing a low-key birding big year with a conservation focus. So far, I birded in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Florida, Texas, Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Delaware. And so far, my year has turned out to be more wonderful but more expensive than I expected. So I'm not sure how much I'll be able to afford to do the rest of the year, but I'm hoping I can still work my way to the main coast, a few places in Arizona, Big Bend in Texas, and parts of California and Washington, and to go on at least one pelagic trip in the Pacific. Two of the trips I've taken, birding tours led by Kim Eckert, were high intensity, covering large swaths of southern Texas and Colorado. My group saw over 200 species in Texas and, despite awful weather, over 150 in Colorado. Exciting and efficient as both trips were, many of the best experiences were almost as frustrating as they were wonderful. Kim was aware of a perfect spot where we could see greater sage-grouse displaying right on an untraveled road. We started while it was still absolutely dark, watching from close range as they strutted about, flaunting their exotic plumage, their May West air sacs popping in and out. The birds continued displaying until well after sunrise, but it had just snowed and the clouds were so thick that we had low light conditions right up until people were starting to get restless and hungry. I could have stayed for at least an hour or two longer until the entire display was over and would have gotten stunning photos as the light improved, but we had to move on. The only way I could have had the experience at all was with this group, and we saw plenty of other species that day that we'd have missed if we hadn't moved on when we did, but it was still a painful trade-off. The problem is that there aren't enough hours in a day or enough days in a year or in a lifetime to take it all in. To get to all the places I've been to, even on my own, I've had to be on something of a schedule. I've funded part of my big year via speaking gigs that covered some of my expenses, but that means that I've had to be at certain places on time for those events. I was exactly where the critically endangered interior population of least terns breeds while I was in Kansas and western Oklahoma, but had to move on to southeastern Oklahoma over a week before the terns were expected to arrive. I made it to southeastern Oklahoma right when Swainson's warblers were establishing territories, but missed out on other birds' arrivals before I had to head on to Delaware. I'm thrilled about the work the Delaware birding community is doing to protect horseshoe crabs and the red knots who depend on their eggs, and I've had a few opportunities to see these splendid birds already, but I have to fly home on the 20th, several days before the full moon works its magic on the crabs, when the red knot spectacle will be at its finest. Meanwhile, by doing all these wonderful trips in so many wonderful places, I'm missing out on migration in my own neck of the woods. I'll be home for at least a couple of weeks in late May and early June when I hope to catch up with my treasured local birds, but I'll have to leave them yet again to see a host of exciting species I can't see in Duluth. Dorothy Gale was right. There is no place like home. But every place is home for some birds. The more of these other places I visit, the hungrier I am to see more and to spend more time in each one, even as I grow hungrier to hunker down with my own dear chickadees and other backyard birds. No human being can experience all of it. I'm finding that the more I see of America's avian wonders, the more I treasure each splendid moment as it happens, and the wealthier I feel in a way that transcends anything that can be measured in dollars. My conservation big year may allow me to get the word out about how and why people are helping birds in need and how we can support them, but it's also turning out to be one of the most fascinating and wonderful years of my entire life. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.